Hey, everyone. Back when we recorded this episode, a conversation with Brett Cross, he was planning on attending the State of the Union. A little while back, we learned that he wouldn't be able to go. We're not sure why. But we wanted to let you know that you're hearing the original version of this conversation. All right, here it is. There's a long-standing tradition in Washington that during the president's State of the Union address, there are these special guests in the audience, avatars for what politicians want to get done. Tonight, President Biden is said to have invited the family of Tyree Nichols, who was killed at the hands of the Memphis police. A former Afghan ambassador is going to be in the audience, too. Each congressperson, they've got their own guest lists. That's how Brett Cross will be there. In truth, Brett wishes he could be anywhere else. An invitation was extended to him because of the public tragedy he's living through. Back in May, his 10-year-old son, Uzi, got killed at Robb Elementary School in Uvalde, Texas. So you're going to Washington for the State of the Union. How do you want to use that time that you're there? It seems like an enormous, awful privilege.
I want to talk about my son and enlighten people on him and the devastation that the inactions of other people have caused the families such as myself.
You could say that the guests in the audience tonight are political props, but Brett is trying to make himself more of a political stumbling block. Unavoidable. There to trip you up in case you're not paying attention. He knows what it means to be stonewalled by politicians. Right after Uzi got killed, Brett came to D.C. to advocate for an assault weapons ban. When he met with his local congressman, a Republican, it didn't go so great.
That was the first meeting, that the first thing we ever did in D.C. There was a bunch of our families there, and everybody was asking questions and talking, and he did his regular spiel on everything. And so I asked him, I'm like, are you in support of this? And he wouldn't answer, and he wouldn't answer.
Of an assault weapons ban?
Yes, ma'am. And he wouldn't answer, and he wouldn't answer. And I said, no, sir, I asked you a question, and I need a yes or a no. And then finally he said, no, I believe in our Second Amendment. And, you know, the same BS that everybody spills because, you know, it's so black and white. That was sarcasm. But then I asked him, I said, would you feel the same had your children been in that class? And then he, you know, did the whole look at his wristwatch. And, oh, well, we've got to go.
Even after all this, Brett keeps coming back to Washington. It's almost like he can't help it. He's done other more personal things to remember Uzi, too. Like he got tattoos, one of Spider-Man, Uzi's favorite superhero. But the other is an upside-down flag. On the white stripes, he inscribed a quote, "The sounds of children screaming have been removed." That was the warning that got put at the top of the video showing the way police officers waited in Robb Elementary's hallways while kids were dying.
And that always stuck with me. It always stuck with me because it wasn't there. The sounds of their screaming wasn't just removed from that video. It was removed from life. You know, they're screaming and yelling at PE and playing and laughing and their voices, everything had, it's been removed now. You know, all we have are videos and recordings and everything.
Yeah, you've described it as feeling empty.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, there's a void there that hurts. It literally aches. And so yeah, with that tattoo, I was like, I'm gonna put those two things together because the nation is in distress because these children's voices keep getting removed and we're not doing anything about it. It's just an everyday thing now.
Yeah, I was thinking about that too, because I feel like after losing a loved one the way you did, some people might get a tattoo of the kid's face, like something sweet to remember them by. And you did that too. But this tattoo seemed like the opposite of that. Like, it seemed like you wanted to stay angry almost.
It's almost a remembrance to keep fighting even when I'm down, because you know there are days that you can't get out of bed, but at the same time I feel like I'm doing an injustice to Uzi and other children if I'm not fighting.
Today on the show, a conversation between me and Brett about what it's like to be forced to the center of the fight for gun safety in this country. I'm Mary Harris. You're listening to What Next? Stick around.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity, much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
This episode is brought to you by Discover. When it comes to your finances, Discover wants you to know they are the credit card that is always there for you. With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, that means no more waiting for, quote, normal business hours just to get a hold of someone. We are talking real service from real people whenever you need it. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. May 24th, 2022 is the day Brett Cross's life changed in ways he's still trying to understand. That's when an 18-year-old gunman walked into Robb Elementary School and killed his 10-year-old son, Uzziah, along with 18 other fourth graders. Two teachers got killed, too. The trauma of that day, it continues to ripple outward now. Losing a kid in a mass shooting means you suddenly have to make all kinds of decisions. Like, do you go back to work? Before Uzi died, Brett worked as a wind turbine technician. He took time off to grieve, and then he started wondering if he could ever go back at all.
I recently got let go. So my boss was absolutely amazing. And he tried to help me as much as he could and everything, but you know, corporate and everything. I took off FMLA and everything because that is a very dangerous job. You're working around 35,000 volts of electricity, you know, and 300 feet in the air. I mean, it's a very hazardous job, and I wasn't able to get back to that. And they sent me a letter saying, oh, well, you know, if you don't show up January 2nd, then you're fired. And I showed up and I was able to do it for about a week. My boss helped me, kept me in the office and everything. But the office is where I got the phone call that day.
That there was a shooting at the school.
Yes, ma'am. And then, you know, I'm opening my work phone for the first time in 7 months, 8 months. And the first thing that pops up was the messages to my wife when we're trying to find Uzi.
Messages from her saying, where are you?
No, of us trying to find Uzi, you know, messaging back and forth because we were informed that that kids ran to the funeral home. They ran to the neighborhood and the hospital. So we're texting back and forth. Have you found him? Is he at the hospital? Is he at, you know, his friend's house? You know, all of those messages. And it just, man, that'll make you spiral hard because it takes you right back to that day.
I read that you built a memorial at home with some of Uzi's favorite things, like the water bottle that the school gave you back with his name on it.
Yes, ma'am.
Do you still have it?
Yes, ma'am.
Do you still add to it?
So that is pretty much just the stuff of his. That's pretty much done. I have we there's a case where his urn is in, that we add when certain things come in, or we see something that reminds us, and we have a little memorial out in the front as well with a bench, and we've gotten tons of paintings and prayer rocks and tear bottles and Bibles and quilts and stuffed animals and everything like that.
I hadn't thought about that, how the stuff might keep coming. And I know it's all well-intentioned, but it also, I don't know if it feels heavy when you get it.
Kind of. I mean, it was especially rough in the beginning, but we still get stuff occasionally. And I mean, it got so we got so overwhelmed with stuffed animals and everything. Like, I'm talking about 40, 50, 60 stuffed animals that people just kept sending and everything, that it got to the point where we couldn't have them. Like, it was filling up the house, so we donated them actually to a woman and children's shelter.
Was there a moment after the shooting where you felt like you had to decide who you were going to be? Maybe it's a choice you're constantly making. Like, how am I going to, how will this change me? Or maybe it's not changing you at all. And like, this is just who you are.
So I don't really feel like there was a change. I can tell you the exact date I decided I wanted to fight. Uzziah's funeral wasn't until June 13th, and the day after his funeral, I was just like, I'm gonna fight. And then that's when they were doing that house committee. I showed up every day to those house committees. They wouldn't let me in. They wouldn't. But I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to start fighting, but I knew that I had to. So I just started showing up.
Explain about the House committees. This is in the Texas State Legislature.
Yes, ma'am. Yeah, they did a investigation into it, and they did a, I think it was a 77-page booklet about what they found. But then they started coming down here to interview officers and teachers and everything like that. But I was there every day, just to even hear anything. And then I started that same weekend, protesting.
There was a lot for Brett Cross to protest over. A state investigation found that while nearly 400 officers responded to the shooting, it was unclear who was in charge of them all. There were school safety officers, border patrol agents, city police, sheriff's deputies. There were nearly 100 officers there from Texas's Department of Public Safety, or DPS. And yet, the shooter was able to tuck himself inside fourth-grade classrooms and murder people, one by one.
What I realized early on was that everybody was passing the buck. Like, nobody wanted to take responsibility for their part. The school blamed it on the cops. The city blamed it on the school and DPS. And, you know, everybody's pointing fingers when, you know, there was failures on every front, from the school to the officers that responded, to our state laws, to our federal laws. I mean, it was a catastrophic failure all over. And I just realized that nobody is going to take accountability. And the only time that the school made changes was after, you know, we did this 10-day sit out.
Yeah, can we talk about that? This was in
Absolutely.
September into October, and you decided to camp out in front of the school administrative building in Uvalde, basically to just, so they couldn't avoid you, so that when people came in, you were there saying, no, what I want is for you to place the safety officers who were on duty when my child was killed. I want you to place them on leave until you figure out like what this independent reporting says about their role.
Exactly. And it wasn't a crazy ask. It's something that should have been done. It's what other places do. If an officer is involved in something, you put them on leave until the investigation is complete. These officers were out on the streets and at our schools the next, I mean, like within a week. But when the school thing happened, the sit out happened, it's started because of an offhand comment that I made, because we were just there to protest. And I had gotten so irritated, and excuse my language, but I was pissed off, that I was like, you know what? I'm not leaving here until you suspend these officers.
So you were in like a private meeting and you're like, yeah, I'm not going to, I'm.
Oh no, this was outside. This was
outside.
No, we blocked them from getting into the administration building, but they had
so it was
made
like
a
a split second decision.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I
you
said,
live just a couple blocks away, right?
Absolutely. Yes, ma'am. And so with that, they'd already made a liar out of me. I told my kids that I would always be there to protect them, that nothing bad would happen to them, and that school made a liar out of me. So I wasn't going to let them do it again. So yeah, for the next 10 days, I didn't go home. I stayed out there the whole full 10 days, camped out.
And you blocked some people from getting in too, right?
I blocked everybody from getting in, to the point where DPS was about to tow my car. But they were doing everything. The first day, if they spent 3 hours working on a way to get inside instead of figuring out solutions to the real problems, that's what they spent their time doing, was to how to get in. Because what, you know, we figured you're not doing your jobs anyway, so why are you even acting upset that you can't get in here? You know, you're not doing our job. You're not protecting our children.
And we got some breaking news out of Texas. The Uvalde School District has suspended its entire full police force in the face of fierce criticism over that department's failings, both during the massacre at Robb Elementary and since.
Families of some of the victims pushed for more accountability. They staked outside Uvalde School District offices for a week and a half. They wanted all of the school police officers who were at Robb Elementary the day of the shooting to be suspended until an independent investigation was completed. On Friday, they got their wish.
And they didn't really say that it was because of you and your protest. They said it was because of recent developments. Did it feel like a win to you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I wouldn't say that it was all because of me and the sit out either. Shimon from CNN has been one of the investigative reporters that has, I mean, really dug his feet in and not let this go, you know. And he had found that they had just hired a DPS officer who was there at Rob that day, that was caught on camera saying, if it would have been my children in there, I'd be in there. So I think it's a mixture of both. I think it was the, you know, the heat from both sides.
Yeah. Would you have even considered yourself political before this year?
No, absolutely not. And I honestly, I still don't consider myself political. Unfortunately, it's the politicians that have made these political issues. They shouldn't be issues. It is not right for children to not be able to go to school and come back home. That shouldn't be political. That is basic humanity. It shouldn't be political, but it's the politicians that make it political. It's the NRA that makes it political. It's the money funneling into these people's pockets that make it political.
Yeah. I wonder if you've had that conversation with people who disagree with you on this issue.
I do try.
Yeah.
I try.
Because you are in Texas.
Yeah. Well, and I get a lot. And they're like, you know, don't tell me what to do with my gun. You don't know about, I'm a gun owner. I have a gun. I have it for my protection at my house. But what I also know is that my 357 pistol does the job. I don't need an assault rifle to do that. So I get that a lot. Like, you don't know. I do know. And that's why I'm telling you, you know, that this is an issue that I understand. Guns for hunting, I know people hunt and everything. But what I have a problem with is the rhetoric that, oh, well, it's because they're fun. Yeah, that shooter thought it was fun too.
Thank you.
After the break, how fighting for gun safety in Washington, D.C. looks different than it does in Texas.
If you want to understand what is happening in the United States right now, you really need to understand what's happening with the courts, the law, and the Supreme Court. The battle between democracy and whatever this cage match is that we're witnessing, it's going to be won and lost at the ballot box, but it's also going to be won and lost in the courtrooms. I'm Dahlia Lithwick. I host Slate's legal podcast, Amicus, and we are doubling our output, bringing you weekly episodes from here on in, because how else can we keep an eye on the many trials of Donald Trump, the conservative legal movement's assaults on our rights, the Supreme Court's latest slate of environmental gutting, gun safety eviscerating cases on the docket? So follow Amicus wherever you get your podcasts, new episodes dropping every Saturday morning.
Brett Cross says, in some ways, showing up in Washington the way he'll do tonight, it's easier than the work he's doing back home in Texas. That's because guns have become non-negotiable politically in his home state. But that hasn't stopped him or other Uvalde parents from pressing their case anyway. Recently, a number of them teamed up with Texas State Senator Roland Gutierrez. They've vowed to show up at the state legislature every week, bringing more bills with them each time. They know an assault weapons ban won't fly in Austin, so they're trying other things instead.
We're going to just stay at them. I mean, there's several laws that Roland Gutierrez is adopting and trying to push through that will help, you know, by raising the age to 21 to buy an assault rifle. And then we're trying to, you know, I want qualified immunity to be thrown out because these people sat outside, 376 officers sat outside for 77 minutes and did nothing.
And they can't be sued because it was in the course of doing their jobs.
Exactly. Well, and or even get in trouble that like they literally sat by. But if a doctor or a nurse comes up on a crash, they are bound to help, you know. There are standards held by other entities. Why isn't it held by these cops?
Senator Gutierrez has 20 bills he plans to unveil. It's a lot of bills.
Yes, ma'am. He's been one of our biggest advocates to help us. And, you know, it's needed and it's appreciated so much because we're small town people, you know. We didn't know politics or how to change laws or to introduce laws or anything like that. So he's been a huge help.
There's been some reporting in the past few weeks that, you know, after the shooting, parents in Uvalde disagreed about how to press for change in the community. And I know that you have a nonprofit and there are many others, too, in Uvalde. Do all these organizations agree on what they want, or is it more, and I imagine this is kind of natural after there's an event like this, everyone's kind of on their own journey. Like, I'm kind of curious where things are at with the families.
So with the families, we pretty much all agree, the victims' families, we all work together and we've all agreed. The only issues that we had was with the community itself, because a lot of people just wanted to sweep it under the rug, like, oh, it happened, but let's move on. You're only ruining our community by fighting. We had more people show up for the superintendent retiring after the sit out. We had more people show up than they ever did when we were asking for change and fighting. And they showed up because a quote-unquote good man retired. They were more worried about that than their children surviving school.
Wow. So community members who obviously know what happened feel like somehow the school or the school system have been attacked?
Yeah. Well, and we get it with the police too. Like, oh, you just want to run off all police, or you're anti-police, or I'm not anti-police. My stepfather is a chief of police, retired, but he was a chief of police. I'm not anti-cop, but I'm anti-cops not doing their damn job, sitting around for 77 minutes while children were bleeding out and screaming and crying and begging to be saved.
Yeah, your protest in front of the school administrative building in Uvalde, it reminded me of another school shooting dad who's gotten a lot of attention, this guy named Manuel Oliver.
Manuel?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know Manny, yeah.
His son was killed in Parkland, Florida. My listeners might remember him because he's the guy who stood up when President Biden announced new gun legislation and basically told him it wasn't enough.
Yep.
When you talk to Manny about the path forward now, like what does he tell you?
What we talk about mostly is just, the grief, he told me early on, he said, you're in it, you're like me, and I know that you're gonna give them hell and give it your all, and you got to do that, but you also have to take care of yourself. You can't fight if you're not well enough to fight. So, I mean, I'm grateful to have met him. I am grateful for his experience, but I also hate it that he is in the position to have to give me that knowledge, because that means that somebody else's kid was murdered.
Now that you have a few months distance from the shooting, I wonder a little bit what this January was like, this start of 2023, where there were so many shootings. Like, did you become the person who was reaching out to other people? Are you not there yet?
No, I've been trying. How do you find a random person, four states over? Like I've been trying, and I've made it known that if anybody knows anybody that was affected, that they can come and talk to me, just how I had Manuel and Fred Gutenberg, who lost his daughter in Parkland as well. So I want to be that person as well. And it brings you back. You wake up and there's another shooting, and it's like, I know what these people are going through.
When you think about trying to convince people who may be way on the other side of this issue from you, what do you think about saying?
So I wear a shirt with Uzi's face on it almost daily. Imagine your child's face on a t-shirt. If you can't bear that, if you can't live with that, if that is something that is terrible for you, then stand up and help us fight for change. Because it's not a matter of if it'll happen to you, it's a matter of when nowadays. Because I am full of regret for not ever standing up and fighting after any of these other school shootings. I've called parents of victims, I've called survivors, and I have apologized to them. I'm sorry that when your shooting happened, that I was like, man, that sucks, but I got to get back to work. And I didn't fight. So which side do you want to be on? Do you want to be on? Do you want to say that you have done everything that you can in case your child is murdered? Or do you want to be full of regret like I am, thinking I didn't do anything to help change that before it happened? Because I was one of the ones that thought it couldn't happen to me.
Brett Cross, I'm really grateful for your time.
Thank you.
Brett Cross is the father of Uzziah Garcia, who was killed at Robb Elementary School in May 2022. And that's our show. What Next is produced by Elena Schwartz, Carmel Delshad, and Madeline Ducharme. We are getting a ton of support right now from Anna Phillips, Jared Downing, and Laura Spencer. We are led by Alicia Montgomery with a little assist from Susan Matthews. Ben Richmond is the Senior Director of Podcast Operations here at Slate. And I'm Mary Harris. Go say hello on Twitter. I'm at Mary's Desk. Thanks for listening. Catch you tomorrow.